Since when don't you trust me?
Since I started finding snakes under every rock I turn over. Ellis was supposed to be keeping tabs on what California was doing, and he gave me no warning at all. So here I am, walking into an investor relations event, and I know exactly as much as the assholes who are buying the penthouse apartments. So you go ahead and tell me who I should trust.
Shit. You think the Callies flipped Ellis?
I imagine by now he's sitting on the beach in San Diego sipping piña coladas.
Or he's dead.
Why do you think so?
Julio flipped.
Silence.
You're sure? Pretty sure. He tried to shoot me in the head.
Why?
Why'd he shoot at me?
Why'd he flip?
Money, it looks like. He was trying to cut himself in on some water rights one of his people was running down here. Wanted to make a big score, I think.
He hesitated.
I think there's a good chance he could have been ratting our people out to the Callies. For the right price, I'm starting to think he was pretty much up for anything.
Christ. I knew I should have pulled him out of Phoenix sooner. That place is corrupt.
Yeah, could have saved his life.
Wait. He's dead?
Pretty dead.
He shot back.
Hit him, too.
It would have been nice to ask him some questions. If we're exposed because of something he did...
Angel could almost hear the gears turning inside Case's quick brain, taking in the new data, building new plans, adapting, changing up. He waited patiently, knowing instructions would follow. Instead of instructions, though, she sighed. And when she spoke, her voice sounded dull and exhausted.
Every time I think we're getting ahead, we catch something like this. I just committed the SNWA to a 4,000-unit Cypress expansion, and now I don't know if we'll even have water in the river by the time it's completed.
You serious?
It was unnerving to hear the doubt in Case's voice. The Queen of the Colorado, sounding as broken as the North Texas water manager bitching about her stolen Red River. The woman who'd work-released a gangster out of prison, given him a gun, and never shown an ounce of doubt, now sounded worried. Worse, she sounded weak.
It had to be California who was running Julio, Case said.
I don't think so. Angel remembered the dead man from Ivis in his fancy apartment, plus the California goons he'd run into at the morgue and again at Tai Young. I get the feeling Callie's in the dark, too. Julio only had one guy working with him, some sonar cholobi. It doesn't feel like he had a lot of muscle backing him.
He was freelancing then?
Seems like everyone starts freelancing when they get a whiff of these rights.
What are they?
Guy who was selling them claimed they were senior Indian water rights that Phoenix owns but don't got control of.
They don't have control of their own water rights?
Case started to laugh.
How'd they manage that? Never underestimate the incompetence of a government salary, Angel said. One of their water lawyers, guy name of James Sanderson, sniffed them out. He was trying to auction them off to California, but he got greedy and teased us with them too, which got Julio involved. And that got him killed. Funny thing is, I think the Ibis guy who bought up the rights for California tried to go indie himself too. Soon as people get their hands on these, they start seeing freelance opportunities.
How senior are these rights?
If what I'm hearing is true, senior to God. Maybe a good chunk of the Colorado River. Maybe senior to California, even.
Case laughed. You don't really believe that.
I don't know what I believe anymore. Whenever anyone gets hold of them, they act like they found the Holy Grail, right before they try to sell them off to the highest bidder.
Do you know how much I did for Julio?
Pulled him out of hell. You did that with all of us.
Everyone's hedging, Kay said. That's what this is about, rats running for their lifeboats.
Had to be a powerful temptation. Those rights are probably worth millions.
Case laughed. If they're as good as you say they are, they might be worth billions. That gave him pause. What was a city's survival worth? Or a whole state's? How much would someone pay to keep the water flowing? How much would Phoenix pay now just to be able to get back on its feet? How much would another city pay to make sure it didn't end up hollowed out like Phoenix?
Do you have any idea where these rights are now?
Case asked. I think the records are in crypto on a computer we ended up with. Julio was all in a hurry to find a way to crack the codes and get in.
It's too bad you couldn't just wound him,
Case said. I would have liked to know how badly damaged we are. I can go back and shake him, but I don't think it'll do any good. I'm glad you have a sense of humor about this. I think we'll be fine. We've got the computer, we've got people who can crack it open.
We?
Angel hesitated. There's a journal involved now, too. Case made a noise of exasperation. This just gets better and better. It's a long story. She's kind of tangled up in the whole thing. She was doing stories about the Phoenix Water guy who found the rights in the first place. It's hard to get her untangled now.
How hard can it be?
Angel hesitated. Have you got something for this woman?
She's useful, okay?
Fine, whatever. I'll find someone who can crack the crypto for you. You have a callback number?
No.
Angel interrupted. I'm not going anywhere near our people. There's no telling who Julio sold out. Everyone we know down here could be on California or Phoenix's watch list. This journal I'm rolling with? She says she's got friends can pop the computer open. Figure they got to be neutral enough that I don't have to worry about getting shot at again.
Reporters.
Case's voice dripped contempt.
This one's different.
Angel trailed off, not wanting to talk about his complicated feelings toward Lucy. She's one of the ones you've got to watch out for. Smart, you know.
Case's voice was dry.
I'm familiar, in theory. Applause from her end started to swamp the conversation.
I've got to go, she said. I need to be in front of the cameras for the speeches.
She paused.
I want those rights.
Like I said, I'm working on it.
You and this journalist. What's her name?
Lucy Monroe. Google her. She won a Pulitzer.
Lovely. He could hear the skepticism.
I trust her,
he said. Case made another noise of derision. And you think the data on that computer is what we want?
I'll call you when I find out for sure.
You do that. The voices in the background were getting louder. There was another roar of applause, and then the phone cut off as Case was swallowed up in her event. Angel dropped his phone onto the ground and stomped it until the plastic broke. He reached in and found the chip and ground it down with his heel, popped the battery, gathered all the pieces and threaded his way out through the claustrophobic plywood alleys until he reached the open boulevards. He found a Johnny truck stationed on the street. He paid his dime, and after leaving the contents of his bowels and its methane composters, he left the cell phone's pieces in the toilet as well. He climbed out and watched the Johnny truck drive off, playing its siren song of bathroom for hire as it drove down the darkening boulevard, taking away all possible chances of tracking him. Only when the Johnny truck rounded the corner did Angel feel truly safe.
For 10 years, Julio had presided over Phoenix, sitting in the dealer's chair, tossing cards out to everyone.
Maybe he'd just turned in the last couple weeks in order to jump on this big score, but Angel wasn't willing to bet his life on it. He headed back into the squats, mulling the implications. They'd have to go over every failed operation, every unfortunate accident, every bit of bad information, and try to figure out if it had been their own fault or Julio stabbing them in the back. Case's networks were dead in Phoenix. Everything would have to be rebuilt. Angel paused in front of a cigarette seller. The guy was all set up, running a small glass fridge off a solar panel and battery, Coca-Cola and Negro Modelo looking icy inside. Beside him, an old guy wearing a John Deere ball cap was watching the news on a tablet. He had copies of Rio de Sangre stacked beside him and a small Santa Muerte shrine as well. The photo on the blood rag's front page was courtesy of Lucy's friend Timo. He'd captured a Texan, crucified against the gates of a community just south of Phoenix. The dead man had gotten the full Santa Muerte treatment. Little bottles of liquor and black roses all around him, a warning to others who tried to storm the community's walls. The cigarette seller caught the direction of Angel's gaze.
It's open season.
Maybe I'm Texan too, Angel said.
The blood rag seller laughed.
You ain't near be down enough.
Angel bought another phone, watching idly as the Blue Mesa Dam disaster played out on the man's tablet. A slow-motion replay of the boulder wall collapsing, brown rushing torrents of water and debris churning down through the canyon. More images. The flood crashing through a town on the riverbanks, rushing on, a torrent so big it was impossible to fix a scale to. The old guy gave him his change in a mix of dollars and UN coins. Angel dropped one in his friend's Santa Muerte shrine. Little votive candles flickering, a couple painted skulls, cigarettes and liquor offered, along with a dead rat. That was a new one to Angel. Didn't normally see rats offered to the skinny lady. He dropped a yuan coin into the dish with the rodent body, hoping for his luck to improve, but not betting on it. Chapter 32. When Lucy climbed the ladder to the squat, she found its door unlocked and the rooms dark. Hello? She pushed the door wider, trying to spy Angel. It was nearly black inside. The curtains leaked a little light from the Red Cross tents down in the plaza, but it wasn't enough. She widened her eyes, trying to force them to adjust, then was overwhelmed by the feeling that someone was inside, waiting for her. Waiting to grab her and finish what Julio had started. She backed out as fast as she could. Behind her, someone coughed. She spun, almost falling off the ladder. Angel was perched above her, a couple ladders over, hidden in shadow, watching.
God damn it, she said. Don't do that.
Shh, he said, and climbed down to join her. She slugged him in the arm when they were both inside.
Why the hell did you do that?
He didn't seem to mind. He flicked on a small flashlight, panned it across the darkness, then turned on the little lantern that hung over the table. It sent harsh beams swinging around the room. Lucy squinted in the light.
Why did you do that? She demanded. Just keeping an eye out.
For what?
Don't really like the feel of this place.
He went to peer out the window. I didn't think you were the picky type.
Not that. Something...
He shrugged.
Feels like a forest fire's about to start.
Charlene says there's a lot of tension right now.
I can feel it.
He looked like it. He kept pacing, moving from the window to the door, peering down at the claustrophobic alley below, then back to the window for another look out at the pump. To her surprise, on his last circuit, he crouched down beside the window and came up with a couple of beers. He pried one open with the top of the other and offered it to her.
Sorry about scaring you, he said.
The way he said it made Lucy think he meant it, even if he didn't say it with a great deal of style. He sat down at the table, wincing. It reminded her of her own scars and pains. Her body felt as if it had been through a meat grinder.
Feel like I got the evil eye painted on me, he said. Been a long time since I felt like this. Like shit's all going to go wrong.
When was the last time? He frowned, looking troubled.
Long time ago. Long, long time.
Working for Case?
Before then, down in Mexico, narcos came after my family.
He shrugged.
My dad was a cop and someone decided he was a problem. He didn't even know what he did or who he'd pissed off. Might have just been that they went after the wrong guy, got mixed up about who they were supposed to be killing.
He took a sip of his beer.
So they came and they killed my mom and sisters while they were walking up to the house. Just cut them down. I was inside. I saw them getting shot, and I ran. Ran out the back and went over a wall and got glass in me when I did, and I just lay there in the dirt. And on the other side, I could hear them shooting. When I snuck back, I found my dad there, and he was crying. Soon as he saw me, he grabbed me and said we were going to El Norte.
When was that?
I was 10, I guess. It was back when the southern border still meant something. People had to wet back it over the Rio Grande or hike the desert. My dad, he was law enforcement.
Angel trailed off.
I remember us driving up the highway fast. Speed bumps kept slowing us down. You been down to Mexico? They got big speed bumps down there, on the highway, so you don't just slam through some little pissant town. I remember my dad kept cursing. Chingado this, mierda that. He never cursed, and he was cursing the whole way. That was the scariest part. Him cursing, but it not being angry. It was him pissing his pants, being afraid.
He trailed off again. Lucy realized that she hadn't taken a sip of her beer in a long time. It was warm in her hand. She wanted to drink, but she didn't want to stop Angel from talking. It was the most she'd heard him say about anything. She could feel herself waiting, sitting there and waiting, hoping for more from him. Angel said, "He put me in the trunk to get across, told the border people he was doing some training, just drove right across in his cop car. I don't know who he paid, how he did it. Course, when you run north, you got to run north far enough. My old man was smart enough to know he needed to run, but he didn't count on them following. Those cartels, they're thorough. Only people who really got their shit together, seems like."
"You're sure he wasn't narco?"
Lucy said. "It seems like a lot of trouble for someone who didn't do anything."
"He said he wasn't. But then again, truth and lies."
Angel shrugged and winced again, rubbed his shoulder.
"Who the hell knows what you're going to say to a 10-year-old?
He laughed and tilted his beer.
"That Cali guy, he had himself a girl."
Lucy was confused by the change of subject.
"You mean the guy from Ibis, Rattan?"
"Yeah, old Mike Rattan had himself a good time."
"I heard Julio talking about shooting her."
"No." Angel shook his head. "He only saw one girl. There was another one hiding under the bed. That's how I found you. Some teenager, and she's selling herself trying to get by. Ends up in the middle of this shit."
He grimaced.
"I should have given her more money."
He touched his shoulder and winced.
"What a mess this has turned out to be."
"How are you feeling?"
"Better than Julio."
She laughed darkly, remembering Angel coming through the door, his gun out, and her feeling...
what?
Relief. Stunned relief that this strange, scarred man had come for her, that someone was there to make the hurting stop. She stood and went over to him.
"Let me see."
He flinched away at first, then allowed her to lift his shirt and peel away the dressing. His shoulder was a mess. She glanced around the squat, spied the empty jugs of past inhabitants.
"I need to get water. I'll be back."
She grabbed a jug and went down to the pump, standing in line with everyone else for her turn. She considered using her card, then dug for cash. Anonymous was better. She was down to the bone for paper money, but she came up with a couple of UN coins, enough to fill the jug anyway. She estimated wrong and ended up with overflow. Had to give it to the person behind her. When she came back, she was surprised that he was waiting patiently, right where she'd left him.
"Not ambushing me twice?"
"I watched you from the window."
Of course he had. "We can't waste this," she said. "Not until I get more cash."
"You're careful with it,"
he said, sounding pleased.
"You don't live in Phoenix as long as I have without learning a few things."
Except what I wasted back at the pump. She wondered why she was hiding that fact from him,
What am I trying to prove?
She tipped a glug of water onto the shirt and blotted at his wound. The lantern cast difficult shadows. She plucked his flashlight from his hand and inspected the mess of his wounds.
I think I got all the shrapnel out. I think you'll be fine.
Her voice stalled. He was looking up at her with impossibly dark eyes. She swallowed. She couldn't look away.
Oh.
She felt his fingers at her tank top, tugging, pulling her toward him.
Oh.
She said again, out loud.
Oh. What the hell?
She let him reel her close. His arms lit up her body, pulling her closer. He was strong. The strength and the hunger in his eyes should have terrified her. Yet all she felt was safety. She let him draw her to him, into his lap. Trying to be gentle as she settled onto him, trying not to hurt his wounds. She cupped his face in her hands, staring into his hunger. She kissed him. Kissed his scars, his cheeks, his lips, all the while staring into those dark eyes. He pulled her into him, impossibly strong. She couldn't have pulled away if she'd wanted to, and she didn't care.
I don't even know him.
And yet, she was desperate to feel his hands on her body. He scooped her up, lifting her. God, he was strong.
Don't hurt yourself.
She heard herself whispering between kisses, and he just laughed, as she kept trying to devour him, and then they were collapsing onto the mattresses together, kissing and touching. She felt his hands cupping her breasts, slipping over her nipples, tugging questioningly at her tank top, pulling it up.
Yes.
Lucy reached down and peeled the shirt up, aware of herself exposed, the bruises and whip lines and cuts that Julio had inflicted on her skin, not caring, not afraid to show herself to Angel.
Proud, even. Look at me. Look at what I've taken. Look what I've survived.
They were both scarred. They were the same. She watched as he struggled to peel out of his own shirt.
Let me.
She heard herself whispering. The shirt came off. His hands fell to her waist, tugging at her jeans, dragging them down over her hips as she worked feverishly at his belt buckle. She felt his hands gripping her ass, pulling her close. And then they were kissing, again and again, licking, biting. His belt came free, leather sliding through loops. She was dimly aware of his gun hitting the floor.
Where did that come from?
A passing thought, unimportant as she fumbled with his zipper and plunged her hand into his pants, wanting to feel his cock.
God, she wanted him. He was terrifying, yet she couldn't make herself stop wanting. She was wet. He hadn't even touched her, and she was wet.
His jeans came off, her own as well, her underwear. Naked, they embraced. She ran her hands over his body, his chest. Lean muscles, scars, ancient gang tattoos. She reached for his cock again, gripping him, reveling in his hardness. And then he was on her, pushing her onto her back, kissing her neck, his hands running down her body, taking possession. Kissing and licking, working across her savaged breasts. Nipping at the hollow of her throat, kissing along her jaw, she arched, pressing her body against his, wanting to feel his skin against hers, his sweat slick against hers, his cock hard against her cunt. Angel's gun was on the floor, inches from her outflung hand. As she lay on her back, she could see it, lying abandoned on the scarred plywood. The gun he'd used to shoot his friend. The man who made the bruises Angel's lips now kissed. It hurt to feel Angel's touch, yet it was a pleasure, too. Proof that she was alive. The slashes and bruises,
a map of her survival that Angel now traced with lips and teeth and tongue.
Lucy pulled him to her, holding his head to her ravaged breasts, reveling in the hurt of it. She had been pursuing death all her life, even as she pretended to avoid it. However much she might have denied it, she'd been desperate to fall into this vortex, and now she was inside it fully, more terrified and alive than she'd ever been. She ran her hands over the water knife's muscled, scarred back as his tongue slid down her belly. She moaned. Yes. Wanting his tongue to travel lower, to pry between her legs, kissing, licking. There. Lucy arched hard, tightening her thighs around his head. He responded, his tongue flicking against her clit. She heard herself gasping and crying out, not caring if the refugees heard her through the thin walls. She was wet. God, she was wet. She loved his tongue. He surfaced, sliding back up her body, smiling, and she pulled him to her, kissing him, eager to taste herself on his lips, to hold his scarred, dark face close to hers, to feel the stubble rake of his cheeks. He was hard against her thigh. Lucy felt a surge of pleasure at how desperate he seemed to take her, and then he was pressing her down. She opened her legs, gripping his ass, encouraging him, arching as he pressed into her, filling her. Her breath caught. Yes, this, yes. And then he was fully inside her. She caught another glimpse of Angel's pistol, abandoned on the floor. Couldn't stop staring at it as they fucked. Mesmerized, drunk on the pleasure of being penetrated, and feeling wildly alive at the sight of the discarded tool of death beside them. In an instant, her life seemed to make sense. She had always needed this, to live on the fine, ragged edge between one thing and the other, between living and dying. She had always been this way. Anna couldn't understand it. Her family couldn't understand it. But now, as she fucked, it felt as if the whole mangled city that she called home made sense. She could hear the whistles of Texas Bang Bang Girls as they hunted for customers, the pinging of the Red Cross pumps as they finished filling a refugee's water jugs, the crying of children in jumbled squats, and the shouts of body loteria winners as they gathered around their phones, hoping for a big score. Life all around her, struggling and surging and trying so very hard to survive in the face of all the horrors the world had to offer. On this ragged edge, she was alive. She clutched this man called Angel, who she was sure would be the death of her, and she pulled him deeper into herself. Gasping, she tried to fill herself completely, driving herself against him, filling herself with him, overwhelming herself, and still it wasn't enough. She took his hands and pressed them to her throat. "Hold me," she whispered, his fingers tightening on her neck. "Yes," she whispered as his hands tightened, like that. Her voice became ragged as his fingers gripped her tighter still. She'd stayed. She'd come to Phoenix to see a place dying, but she'd stayed for the living, trying to divine something meaningful from this place's suffering. What does a place that falls apart look like? What did it mean? Nothing. It doesn't mean anything. It just tells me how badly I want to live. She fucked in the dark zone, surrounded by people who faced the whirling saw blade of collapse. And she urged the water knife's strong, scarred hands to grip her tighter still as he reared over her. She pressed her hands against his, encouraging him, egging him on, feeling his strong fingers. There. Powerful hands that had killed untold numbers now held her, now controlled her as he drove deeper into her.
He seemed to know her needs.
Tighter,
she whispered. Tighter.
Iron fingers took possession of her breath. She felt her heart thudding against his grip.
He was death. He was taking her as death took all things. He thrust into her again, and she arched against him, overwhelmed with need. It doesn't matter, she told herself. She was surrounded by death. There's no way out.
Tighter.
This was what she needed. To lose herself entirely, to be annihilated. She was desperate for it. She was desperate to feel alive, to know that she risked everything and still lived. His sweat burned on her ravaged tits, her ribs, her belly as he plunged into her, filling her, using her. She wanted him. God, she wanted him.
She imagined him thrusting through her entirely, impaling her like this, with his hands around her throat.
Tighter.
She was rasping, the crush of his fingers overwhelming. He had her life. He had her breath. He could kill her if he wanted. There was nothing of her now. She was gone. Her air was gone. Her heart pounded in her ears. His fingers held her throat and her entirely. Taking away her air and her, letting him take it. This was trust. This was life.
Tighter,
she whispered. Tighter.
Chapter 33. Maria's feelings of security and safety lasted exactly a day. All the way until Esteban and Cato rolled up in front of Tumi's house in their big black pickup. As soon as Maria saw them, she ran inside and locked the door. But Esteban didn't seem to care. He and his buddy just went and opened the tailgate of the truck and reached into the bed. Tumi hit the pavement with a hard thud. Esteban and Cato hauled him up to the front door, while Maria stared through the barred window. Blood ran from Tumi's temple. His lips were split from beatings, and one eye was swollen shut. The two thugs had his hands zip-tied behind his back. They dragged him up to the doorstep and threw him down on the concrete.
Hey there, Maria,
Esteban called.
You got money for me?
Maria held her breath, trying to be silent, pretending that he didn't know she was on the other side of the door.
Come on, girl. Open on up and cough up the cash.
Stay quiet. Just stay quiet and they'll go away.
We know you're in there.
There was a thud and a grunt.
Dumbass here already told us you're in there, so make this easy on Mr. Pupusa and get your culito out here where I can see it.
Stay quiet, quiet like a mouse. It will all go away.
Esteban shouted again.
You think we're stupid? You think we don't know you peddled ass the other night?
There's no need to talk like that, Maria heard Tumi say. We can keep this businesslike.
Businesslike? Is that what you want?
Esteban laughed.
Okay, here's some business for you.
Maria heard a thud and a grunt. Another thud. She inched up to peer through the video monitor to the outside of the house.
Last chance, girl.
Esteban put a gun to Tumi's knee and pulled the trigger. Tumi screamed as his knee exploded.
God damn!
Esteban laughed.
That's got to fucking hurt.
He turned to the camera and stared up at it, grinning through the screen at Maria, his face speckled with Tumi's blood, while Tumi writhed behind him on the concrete.
He said he wanted it businesslike, Esteban said. You don't come out this second, I'm going to do some business with that other knee too. See how this crippled motherfucker pushes pupusas when he's got no legs. Run, Maria, Tumi shouted. Just run. Get out. Don't worry about me.
Esteban hit him upside the head, stunning him. He grinned again at the monitor.
I just want to get paid, girl. Either I get paid in cash or I get paid in blood, and I still come back for your Texas ass.
Toomey was spitting blood.
Don't do it, Maria. If you want your friend to live, you come out now. Otherwise, I put him down, and then I come and get you anyway.
Okay, Maria shouted through the door. I got your money. Don't hurt him anymore.
That's what I like to hear.
Don't do it, Toomey shouted. But Maria was already running to where she'd stashed the small amount of cash she'd gotten from the scarred man. It wasn't enough, but she shoved the money through the mail slot.
Esteban crouched down and picked up the cash, counting.
Looks a little light, girl.
It's all I have.
Oh, yeah?
Esteban knelt beside Toomey and jabbed his gun into the man's mouth.
That's funny you say that, because someone was going around asking our coyotes about buying a ticket out of here. So unless you were planning on going north with pupusas for payment, I think we got ourselves a problem.
It's all I have, Maria shouted through the door. He was using his own money, not yours.
I don't quite work like that, girl, and you know it. You still got debts. Now if you come out and pay, I promise I'll leave your friend's brains inside his head.
Don't,
Toomey shouted.
Don't do it.
But all Maria could think of was Sarah dead in the bed, because she'd run. She'd let Sarah go, and Sarah had died. With tears in her eyes, she fumbled with the deadbolts. Esteban grinned as the door swung open. He was enjoying this.
Leave him alone, Maria said. It's not his fault.
Toomey's face was covered with blood. He was breathing heavily, blood bubbling from his nose as he gasped for breath around the barrel.
Not him. Please, not him too.
I don't have any money, but I'll come with you.
For a second, she thought Esteban was going to shoot Toomey anyway. But then he smiled and took his gun out of Toomey's mouth. He motioned to Cato to get in the truck. Maria crouched down beside Toomey.
Don't,
he whispered.
Don't go with them.
I can't.
Maria blinked away tears.
I can't let you get killed because of me.
I'm sorry,
Toomey said.
I thought I knew a coyote who wouldn't sell me out.
It's not your fault.
She wiped at her eyes.
Don't do this,
he said.
Don't.
To Maria's horror, she could see that Toomey was readying himself to fight again. To try to fight, even though it would just get him killed. He was going to try to grab Esteban. Maria lunged forward and hugged him, hard. Hugging him so hard that he couldn't do anything foolish.
It's not on you, she whispered.
And then she straightened. Toomey's blood was on her blouse, but she didn't care.
You can't hurt him, she said to Esteban. I'll do whatever you want. I'll earn how you want, but you can't hurt him.
Fine by me. Vet just wants you. He don't care about no pupusa, man. To Toomey, Maria said,
Don't worry. I'll be back as soon as I pay the vet.
Yeah, she'll be back, Esteban smirked. Once she's all paid up.
He grabbed Maria's arm and hauled her toward the truck. Maria glanced back and saw that Toomey had dragged himself up to a sitting position, still clutching his leg.
You can't hurt him, Maria said again.
You got to promise me.
You should be worried more about your own hurting, girl. Vet gave you a special pass and you fucked him over. Late on payment and on top of that, trying to make a run for it?
Esteban laughed as he jammed Maria into his truck.
Pupusa man got it easy in comparison to what the vet's got planned for you.
Sitting between the two men, riding to her fate, Maria told herself that she wasn't going to show fear. But as the truck turned into the vet's territory and wound its way through the subdivision curves, she could feel her fear building. The hyenas caught sight of the truck and paced as it roared up to the gates. Their fenced pens encompassed 4 or 5 properties, and now they poked their heads out of the open doors and shattered windows, eager and predatory as Cato honked at the gates and was let in. Inside the vet's compound, some of the vet's people looked up at Esteban's arrival, but most of them were sitting in the shade under big, colorful umbrellas, playing cards and dominoes.
The hyenas came loping to where their pens abutted the vet's human spaces, pressing their noses against the wire. The vet came out of his house as Esteban dragged Maria from the truck. Esteban handed him the cash. The vet hefted the cash, considered it, then turned his gaze on Maria.
"This all the money you made working for me? This?"
Maria nodded, not trusting her voice.
"I tried to help you, you know."
He waited, seeming to expect an answer. The silence between them stretched. The hyenas paced behind the chain link and razor wire.
"I had to..." Maria started.
"You had to try to run away instead of trusting me to take care of you."
She shut up. The vet's pinprick eyes bored into her.
"I would have let you earn your way across the river, girl. Do you understand that?"
He gripped her chin.
"I wanted to help you. I liked you."
He cocked his head, frowning.
"Such a smart young lady." I thought, "Ah, this one, this girl, she deserves a second chance. I will take this one under my wing. I will give her a chance to earn, and then, when she has worked, she will go north with a tidy bit of cash in her pockets, and she will always remember how I did a good thing for her."
"I'm sorry."
"I asked Santa Muerte about you again."
He waved toward where his shrine glittered with emptied tequila bottles.
"She didn't say to save you this time. She doesn't like people who break their promises either."
The hyenas on the other side of the fence whined and giggled, seeming to sense opportunity in their master's conversation.
"Sarah died," Maria tried to explain. "I panicked."
"I didn't care about Sarah," the vet said. "I only cared about you. The skinny lady cared about you. And you didn't do what we asked."
"I can work now," Maria said. "I can pay you back."
The vet favored her with a pleased look.
"We're past money, I think. The issue before us is atonement, and atonement costs more than just an offering of money."
He stood up and looked to Esteban and Cato.
"Take care of her."
Esteban and Cato seized her arms and dragged her over to the hyena's pens. She struggled, but they were used to people fighting for their lives and held her easily. The hyenas went crazy. First one, then others, sending up yips of excitement, standing up on hind legs, giggling at their approach. More emerged from the shade of the abandoned houses, popping out through open windows and sprinting toward the three of them as Esteban and Cato dragged her through the dust. Maria jammed her feet into the dirt, screaming. Esteban and Cato laughed. They threw her against the fence, and the hyenas lunged for her, but she bounced away. She scrambled back as the animals lunged against the fence, shoving their snouts against the chain link, seeking to slam through. Esteban and Cato corralled her and shoved her closer to the fence, levering her closer and closer.
"You like them, puta? They like you."
She couldn't get away. All the hyenas were at the fence, a dozen at least. Esteban and Cato pressed her closer. Teeth, saliva, brindled fur. The seething, bobbing movement of starving fascination. The hyenas pushed their noses through the link, trying to get at her. Their clamor was deafening. Esteban grabbed one of Maria's wrists and held it tight.
"Let's give them a taste."
Maria found herself screaming, struggling to get away, watching her fingers moving closer and closer to the fence and the teeth on the other side. She couldn't stop them. She couldn't get away. Her fingers touched the chain link. She made a fist, but Esteban rammed her hand hard against the fence, and the hyenas were there, tearing. Maria screamed as her fingers came off in their mouths. Chapter 34. By the second day of waiting for word from Timo, Lucy was climbing the walls with worry. "I'm going," she said. The morning sun was blazing in through the window of their squat, and it was boiling inside, and all she wanted to do was get out of that dim, miserable, sweltering space. But Angel was against it. And now, after a second day of sticking close to the hideout, she was going crazy.
"I'm going," she said again, more firmly.
"There's a good chance someone is watching your place," Angel pointed out.
"Sonny's my dog. I have to get him. He's my responsibility."
Angel shrugged.
"Should have thought of that earlier."
Lucy glared at him.
"What if I send Charlene?"
He looked up from the cheap tablet he was watching.
"If you got to do something, send someone who doesn't know where you're hiding."
"We don't even know if anyone's actually searching for us."
He was quiet, thinking about this, then shook his head.
"No, someone's looking."
"How do you know?"
He gazed up at her with his dark eyes.
"Because I'd be looking if I was them."
Finally, they compromised. Lucy had Charlene call a boy up the street to drop by and take Sonny over to his house. It wasn't what she wanted, but at least Sonny would be okay. She worried. She paced. Angel didn't seem to mind the waiting at all. He seemed completely settled. He reminded her a little of some kind of peaceful Buddha waiting for his moment. Ready, but patient. Content to sit and watch TV and keep an eye out the window of the squat for signs of trouble. Angel had picked up a Chinese language tablet discarded on the street and paid some kids by the water pumps to jack its download controls. So now, instead of running handset tracking instructions and watching videos of people mime their way through basic language and etiquette, he had it streaming an old Undaunted episode. Tinny sound and jittery video, but still, it seemed to be more than enough for him. It was infuriating that he seemed unbothered by the waiting. She wondered if it had something to do with his time in prison, or his life in Mexico, or some other part of his life that he refused to reveal. She didn't understand him at all. She found herself alternately wanting him intensely and feeling repelled and irritated by his serenity. Right now, he seemed perfectly complete. Sitting with a banged-up language pod, he looked younger. When he grinned at something happening on the screen, it was almost as if she were looking past the scars to some other version of him. The more innocent version. The boy before the water knife. Lucy curled up next to him on the mattress.
Christ, another Undaunted episode.
"You're still watching this?"
"I like these early episodes," he said. "They're the best, when it's all still a mystery."
On the screen, a bunch of Mary Perrys were praying to God and getting ready to cross the river into Nevada. They were praying for God to open the hearts of the Desert Dog Militia that was waiting on the other side and that had so far prevented them from making it across.
"Nobody's that stupid," Lucy muttered. "You'd be surprised how dumb Mary Perrys are."
And just like that, the boy was gone. She was cuddled up beside a killer who did Catherine Case's bidding.
"You know those people?"
"Who? Mary Perrys?
What do you think?"
"No, the other ones, the desert dogs."
He made a face.
"That's not what they call themselves."
"You know what I mean. You worked with them, didn't you?"
Angel paused the screen and glanced over at her.
"I do whatever Case needs doing, that's all."
"Those people are vicious."
He frowned, then shook his head.
"No, just frightened."
"They scalp people," Lucy pointed out.
Angel shrugged.
"They get out of hand sometimes. It's not their fault."
He started the video again. Lucy had a hard time controlling her voice.
"Not their fault? I've been up to the border. I've seen what they do."
She put her hand in front of the screen, trying to get Angel's attention.
"I've seen scalps."
Angel paused the video stream and met her gaze.
"You ever hear about that psychology experiment where this guy made people pretend like they were either prisoners or guards? And everyone started acting just the way prisoners and guards really act. You see that?"
"Sure, the Stanford prison experiment." Angel started up the Undaunted episode again, pointed at it. On the screen, the desert dogs were starting to butcher Mary Perry's.
This is the same. You give people something to do and that's what they are. People.
He shrugged.
It's the job that pulls people's strings, not the other way around. Put them on the border, tell them to keep the refugees out, they turn into a border patrol. Put them on the other side, they beg for mercy and get themselves scalped and take it in the ass just like the Mary Perrys. None of them choose their jobs. They just end up in them. Some people got born in Nevada, so they play desert dogs. Other people, they're born in Texas. They learn to crawl on their bellies and beg. Mary Perrys, they pray and they go across the river like sheep. And the desert dogs, they rip into them like prey. If they were born opposite, it would still be the same.
You too?
Everyone, he said.
You live in a nice house? You're one kind of person. You live in the barrio, you run with a gang. You go to prison, you think like a con. You join up with the guardies, you play soldier.
And if Catherine Case recruits you?
You cut what needs cutting.
So you don't think people are anything on their own, inherently? You don't think anyone can be better than what they grew up with?
Shit, I wouldn't know. He laughed. I ain't that deep.
Don't do that.
Do what?
Pretend to be ignorant. For a moment, his lips compressed, showing a flash of irritation, the urge to combat her. She almost expected him to flare up somehow, to lash out at her. But then it was gone, and he was placid again.
Okay, he shrugged. Maybe people got choices. But mostly they just do what they're pushed to do. You push, they stampede.
He nodded down at the screen and restarted the video.
And when shit really starts falling apart, sure, people work together for a while, but not when it gets really bad. I read this article about one of those countries in Africa, Congo or Uganda or something. I was reading, thinking how shitty people are to each other, and then I got to a part where these soldiers, they...
He glanced at Lucy, then looked away.
They did a bunch of shit to a village.
He shrugged.
And it was exactly what some militia I worked with did to a bunch of Mary Perrys who tried to swim across the river to Nevada. And that was exactly like the cartels did when they took Chihuahua for good. It's the same every time. All the rapes, all the chopped off cocks that get shoved in dudes' mouths, all the bodies burned with acid or lit on fire with gasoline and tires. Same shit over and over.
Lucy felt sick, listening to him. It was a view of the world that anticipated evil from people because people always delivered. And the worst part was that she couldn't really argue.
Like there's something in our DNA, she murmured, that makes us into monsters.
Yeah, and we're all the same monsters, Angel said. And it's just accidents that turn us one way or another, but once we turn bad, it takes a long time for us to try to be something different.
Do you think there's another version of us, too?
You mean like if we're devils, we also get to be angels?
He tapped his chest, indicating himself. She couldn't help smiling.
You're probably not the best example.
Probably not.
On the screen, Tao Ox was trying to convince some more Mary Perrys not to trust the coyotes who were about to guide them across. No one was listening to him. Angel blew out his breath and nodded at the screen.
I think we wish we were good anyway, he said. It feels good to wish we were as good as him.
Lucy looked at the TV show, then back at Angel, and was hit again by the unsettling impression of naivete. One minute he seemed so hard that he might as well have been sculpted from slaughter and granite. But then, watching Relic Jones set his booby traps for the human traffickers, Angel became almost entirely innocent. Enraptured. Uncynical.
He's totally gonna hand it to the coyotes, Angel said.
And to Lucy, he looked like a wide-eyed boy, entranced by the exploits of his hero. Lucy couldn't help laughing.
Do you seriously like this show?
Yeah, it's great. Why?
It's propaganda. More than half of the show's funding comes from the UN High Commissioner for Refugees.
Angel looked surprised.
Seriously?
You didn't know?
Lucy shook her head, amazed. They wanted to make Texas refugees more relatable to Americans in the northern states.
I did a profile of the producers. More than half the show is subsidized. You seriously didn't know?
She started to laugh again, then laughed harder at Angel's bereft expression as she did.
I'm sorry, she gasped. I thought you knew, big badass water knife. I thought you people were always in the know.
She shook her head, gasping, trying to stifle her laughter. He was looking at the screen, his expression wounded.
I still like the show, he said. It's still good, though.
He looked so sad that Lucy took pity on him. She choked back her laughter.
Yeah, she said. It's still good.
She curled up next to him and laid her head on his shoulder.
What other episodes do you have?
Timo's call came an hour later.
Well, I got what you wanted. Meet me at the Hilton in the bar.
Seriously?
Lucy asked.
You cracked it?
Yeah, I cracked it. He hesitated. But you aren't going to like what I got.
What's that supposed to mean?
Meet me in an hour, and for God's sake, don't tell anyone we're meeting.
Which gave Lucy time to worry and stew before driving the beat-up metro car that she'd borrowed from Charlene downtown, taking dirty looks for her Texas license plates the whole way. Inside the Hilton Six, the bar was dim, letting in the blaze of the desert sun through auto tints that cast the space in quiet amber. Timo was already waiting in a booth by the window, sitting with Rattan's laptop, looking ethereal in the filtered light. It was as if everything in the bar were glazed by perpetual sunset. Timo caught sight of her, but his lips remained pressed in a tight line as she approached.
What's wrong?
She asked, as she slid in across from him.
What have you got?
We've known each other a long time, right?
Sure, Timo. What's up?
He tapped Rattan's laptop.
This is ugly stuff, girl.
She looked at him, confused.
What's wrong? When you said you wanted me to look at this, I thought it was...
He lowered his voice.
You didn't tell me we were pushing up against California.
Does it matter?
You know what? I'd say it doesn't. Except I got a visit from a couple of guys this morning who flashed Ibis Exploratory business cards at me. Nice guys, you know? Just a couple nice guys who wanted to know if I was planning on living much longer in Phoenix. Real plata o plomo fuckers, you know?
Ibis?
Lucy felt a chill.
Ibis came to you?
If I'd known you were doing a water thing, I would have used someone else. I thought this was narco.
Ibis knows you have the laptop?
Timo gave her a pained look.
Actually, they know you have it.
He pushed the computer across to her and stood up.
Are you serious?
Lucy hissed.
They threatened me, Lucy. Me and Amparo. What am I supposed to do?
He hesitated.
They just want to talk to you.
And then he was up and walking away, walking fast, leaving her sitting in the booth, setting her up. A shadow descended on her table, impeccable, settling comfortably into Timo's place, tugging at his tie, opening his jacket. Lucy recognized him as soon as he sat down. It was the same executive who had approached her years ago, the man from Ibis. The man from so long ago who had observed, "You write a lot of stories that are critical of California." She remembered him pushing the blood rag across to her, along with a pile of Chinese currency, letting her know the rules of the game that would allow her to keep working in Phoenix. The man smiled as he took possession of the booth. He seemed almost unaged. Lucy tried to recall his name.
Coda, she said. You were David Coda.
Well done, Coda said, smiling. We always thought you were good at your work. You had that knack for knowing the right names. Keeping people up in your head with no help from a device. Sign of a good mind.
made it hard to know what you were up to sometimes, with you keeping so much locked inside your head.
He tapped his glasses, their data glazing the surface, a muddy window into his mind.
Most people need more help for their memories,